Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. In the spirit of its founder, Edward F. Adams, who gave the club its motto, namely, "We only propose to find truth and turn it loose in the world." I'm John Sutter of the club's International Relations Forum and your chair for today. We welcome any viewers or listeners and invite our audience to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker. This evening, our speaker is Richard Gage of the American Institute of Architects, speaking on 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, re-examining the destruction of the three World Trade Center towers. Mr. Gage is a San Francisco Bay architect and a founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, an organization that has grown to over 800 professionals around the world, whose website is www.ae911truth.org. He's been a practicing architect for over 20 years and has worked on most types of building construction, including fireproofed steel-framed buildings. Recently, he worked on the construction documents of a 1.2 million square foot mixed-use project, including a 320,000 square foot office building involving about 1,200 tons of steel framing. Mr. Gage became interested in researching the destruction of the WTC high-rises after hearing Professor David Ray Griffin, who had written on omissions and distortions of the 9/11 Commission report, and who on April 3, 2006, spoke in a packed house here in the Commonwealth Club. Why, in contrast to the conventional wisdom, have an increasing number of Americans called for a really independent investigation of what happened on September 11, 2001? Was it partly because the Commission's report was not the product of the commissioners, so much as of its executive director, a close friend of Condi Rice, who had been in touch with Karl Rove, and who wouldn't allow any of the many investigators to have any connection with the members of the Commission itself? Was it partly because there were three World Trade Center towers that, quote, collapsed, unquote, not just the two in the Commission's report? Following Mr. Gage's presentation, he will take questions from the microphones in the two aisles. The program ends at 7 o'clock, after which the club will sell copies of his DVD on the subject at the table in the lobby. Without further ado, Richard Gage.
Thank you very, very much. And good evening, friends of the Commonwealth Club of California. And a special hello to our viewing audience from around the world on our live streaming webcast tonight. It's an honor to be chosen by this most esteemed forum to deliver our most important and timely message tonight. Thank you for your courage and for your willingness to reconsider the very difficult subject of the destruction of the World Trade Center high-rises and its staggering loss of life on 9/11. Now, just as architecture and engineering projects are sometimes joyful and sometimes very, very difficult, this particular one has proven to be one of the most difficult. And not difficult in terms of reaching conclusions, though, but difficult in terms of the implications of those conclusions and finding people open-minded and willing to hear the facts about these high-rise buildings. How many of you were able to watch the National Geographic Entertainment special last week, 9/11 Science and Conspiracy? Great. Well, guess what? We were featured on the conspiracy side of the equation, along with a series of highly questionable experiments by what is essentially a defense contractor, Emertech of New Mexico. We spent over 1 hour in our interview with National Geographic highlighting all of the evidence that you're going to see tonight. Guess how much of it was aired in this fair and balanced journalistic piece? Zero. Nada. This is the challenge of truth in this age where 90% of the media is owned by five corporations. In the spirit of Edward Adams, the Commonwealth Club founder, my commitment to you tonight is to speak the truth and to leave you with valuable information, science-based information. I believe that you will come to an updated understanding about what is science and what is conspiracy. But please, don't believe me. We're not looking for believers. This is not some kind of new religion. I implore you, check out every fact you hear tonight, because it is extremely important that we know the whole truth about this event. After all, it served as the pretext for the invasion of two countries in which already over 1 million people have perished, and the loss of many of our hard-won freedoms through legislation and freedoms that we have cherished here in the United States, and a host of other ills as a result of 9/11 that we're suffering from currently as a nation. Now, all of this remains intact if we continue to ignore or sweep the truth about 9/11 under the rug of history. And only the truth about 9/11 will stop another 9/11 type attack from happening again. So we must dedicate ourselves to finding out exactly what happened and why, and to bring those actually responsible to justice. So these are among the many reasons that we must peer into this painful part of our recent history and re-examine the relatively new evidence, physical evidence from 9/11 that we've not seen in the mainstream media. As one of our mentors, Joe Princiota, points out, to identify the perpetrator, first know the crime. That's what we focus on, the evidence found at the crime scene tonight, as well as witness testimony. Interestingly, a 2007 poll by Scripps Howard, Ohio University, found that 16% of Americans believe that the World Trade Center Twin Towers were brought down by explosives. But let's take our own poll here tonight and find out where we are. How many of us pretty much believe the official story that's been handed to us by the media, the government, myself, up until 3 years ago, being a Reagan Republican, listening to free speech radio? I heard David Ray Griffin on the radio, and fascinating information. I had to go check it out. But until that point, sure, of course, we had large airplanes hitting these delicate buildings with large explosions of jet fuel, igniting fires inside the buildings, weakening structural steel, and causing a gravitational collapse down to the ground. How many of us pretty much believe we're there tonight? That's the official story. Hold up your hands high. Don't be shy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. How many of us are unsure? We've heard a few things, but we're here. On each side, we're here to find out what's really going on with this issue. Unsure. Hold up. Go like this so I can count you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 1, 2, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 20, 29, 30, 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 3, 8, 9, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 40, 41. And how many of us believe these buildings are brought down by explosive control demolition? Yikes. Oh, a whole lot of the rest of you. I won't count you. We'll deduct you from the overall total. How's that? The rule is you have to vote, because we're going to find out where we are at the end of this presentation in 40 minutes and see if there's been any shift in perception. Well, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, claims that they found no evidence for explosive controlled demolition. Later, they acknowledge that they never looked for it. How can you find what you're not looking for? Well, guess what? Thousands of scientists, scholars, architects, engineers looked for it, and it wasn't hard to find at all. We've been speaking about it now for 3 years, AE 9/11 Truth, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, in over 30 cities, 12 American states, Canada, Europe, and we'll be in Australia, New Zealand, and Japan before the end of the year, visiting 14 cities there, brought by a very important senator to Japan. And he will be introducing us in Japan. As a result of all of this activity, we have hundreds of engineers, architects signed on to our petition. I represent 830 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation of the collapses, the destruction of these towers. Let's get something clear from the start, though. The ever-growing number of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth are building and technical professionals. We're not conspiracy theorists, okay? In fact, as I mentioned, I've never been an activist before, a good conservative Republican for 30 years. We're looking at the science-based forensic evidence found in the destruction of these high-rises. This is our website. We're going to be going very fast tonight in just 40 minutes. Later, you can find the DVD in the back and online as well. In 2 hours, you can the complete picture of all of this evidence is laid out for you. But in brief, we have bullet points of evidence on the right side. We now have, as I mentioned, 830 architects and engineers. Sign the petition here if you find yourself convinced by this evidence, supporting a new investigation. You don't have to be an architect or engineer. We have several categories of others as well. You can step through the PowerPoint on the left side of the website at your own pace so that you can look at this information much more carefully. Now, buildings are destroyed by a number of different forces. So let's just talk about this. Each of them have, very fortunately, different and identifiable characteristics. For instance, fires destroy buildings very differently than controlled demolitions. Let's just talk about this for a minute. Fires, by their nature, move through an office building every 20 minutes or so in a given area, looking for fresh new fuel sources, leaving the burned-out area to cool. So when buildings collapse due to fires, they have large, gradual deformations. They don't collapse suddenly through the path of what was greatest resistance, the thousands of tons of structural steel. And we've never had a steel frame high-rise building collapse due to fire ever. It just has not happened until 9/11. Let's talk about controlled demolitions for a minute. We have a sudden onset of destruction. Explosions going off in a timed sequence, floor by floor, removing the column structure so that the building can fall at virtually free fall acceleration into a small pile into its own footprint, a symmetrical destruction, very controlled, engineered. Remember, buildings that collapse due to unplanned events or naturally fall over, falling into the path of least resistance. Buildings that explode, we have large voluminous clouds of pyroclastic-like shaped clouds caused by the expansion of the gases, the massive heat from the explosive. We have witnesses that hear sounds of explosions. They see flashes of light. So let's take a look then and compare, see what the typical features of a controlled demolition might be. We have a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the structure, for instance, a straight-down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint. Demolition waves remove column supports. That's how you achieve that. And so we have a free-fall speed almost through the path of what was greatest resistance in this type of destruction, resulting in the total dismemberment of the steel structure, ready for loading and shipment. We have minimal damage to adjacent structures, sounds and flashes of explosives, as we mentioned, enormous clouds of pulverized concrete. Sometimes we have explosive charges going off at floors that appear to be mistimed. And we have chemical evidence of cutter charges. Well, this is all direct evidence of explosive destruction, and fire can't account for any one of them, let alone all 10 of them. So if we have these, we know we have an explosive controlled demolition, especially if we have corroborating evidence, like experts agree, yeah, that's a controlled demolition. Government documentation is really quite helpful in these. Expert corroboration, foreknowledge of the destruction, because these controlled demolitions are planned months in advance. And, of course, video documentation. This is all proof of controlled demolition. What we're going to do now is compare this to our first building, which is the third skyscraper to collapse on 9/11. 47 stories tall, would have been the tallest building in 33 of our states, actually. It wasn't hit by an airplane. It was a football field in length away from the North Tower. How many of us haven't heard about Building 7? I hadn't before 3 years ago. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Anybody over here? 10, 11, 12, 13. Anybody else? 14. So let's see what happens. This building collapsed at 5:20 in the afternoon of 9/11. It was hit by debris from the North Tower when the North Tower came down, and it sustained some fires. We're told by the official story that these are large fires. We'll take a look at them in a moment, but they appear to be small, isolated pockets of fires. So we have Building 7 then. We're going to compare the features of Building 7, the evidence we find there, to the controlled demolition. What's the first one? Do we have a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the structure? This results in a straight-down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint. Let's listen to Dan Rather narrate perhaps our first look at the destruction of Building 7.
Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
What, Dan? Deliberately destroyed by... Dan never repeated these words after 9/11. In fact, most of us have not seen this building come down on mainstream media. Why? This was the third worst structural failure in modern history. And most all architects and engineers know nothing about it. Why? Let's look again. This is the evidence of the worst fires that we have in photographs or videos. They appear to be small, isolated pockets of fire, 7th, 8th floor, 12th, 13th floor. And interestingly enough, that was 2 and 3 o'clock. By 4:45, the fire on the floor where the initiating event, 12th and 13th, 12th floor, is out. There's no raging fire at all. And yet this is where the event started. Why? Because the east penthouse falls first, and so we had to find fault with column number 79 in this building. We go into more detail on this, the NIST's official story about the collapse. This is the first time a building has collapsed due to fire, we're told. And what is it? A new phenomena. The beams expanded. Never happened before in history. Let's take a look side by side. On the left, we have Building 7. On the right, we have a known controlled demolition. Is there any relationship? Is there cause for concern that would warrant an investigation, at least, into the use of explosives? Didn't do it, won't do it, can't get them to do it. Demolition waves remove column supports. That's how we get this to happen. How do we do that? We have 24 core columns in this building. They have to be removed essentially simultaneously, within a fraction of a second, on each floor, synchronistically timed, in order to bring this building straight down. Any deviation from that pattern, the building will begin to tip, as it does in a natural process. Can fire achieve that level of precision? Do we have a free fall speed through the path of greatest resistance? Let's take a look. We can see the building gaining downward momentum with each second. The distance is increasing over time. You can log it on a drop distance versus time. Fits the free fall curve almost precisely. In fact, NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, ultimately acknowledges the free fall speed of the acceleration of this building in 8 stories of it, 100 feet in the first, or nearly the first 2.25 seconds. This is acknowledged finally by them when challenged publicly by David Chandler, Stephen Jones, and they do not acknowledge the obvious implication of such free fall acceleration, which means the columns have to have been removed. Why? Because a building can't fall as fast as a brick falling off the top of it and crush 40,000 tons of structural steel. It's got to slow down if that's going to happen. That's the physics of it. Nobody argues with that, by the way. They just don't acknowledge it. Total dismemberment of steel structure. We had a 47-story skyscraper collapsing like a house of cards into a pile just 4, 5, 6 stories high in a haystack pile. This can't happen in a moment steel frame resisting structure. Very rigidly welded beams to columns in the perimeter steel frame. Remember, buildings that fall over, we see what's essentially a building at the base. The individual structural steel elements are not dismembered from each other. The concrete is not pulverized. Do we have sounds of explosions? Let's listen to this witness, Barry Jennings, occupant of the 23rd floor, who went back in after everybody else had been evacuated. He goes back in. What does he say?
When we got to the 8th floor, I started walking to one side of the building. That side of the building was gone. The first explosion I heard when I was on the stairwell landing, when we made it down to the 6th floor. Then we made it back to the 8th floor, I heard some more explosions.
What's the sound?
Like a boom. Like an explosion.
A lot of explosions. How about this gentleman, New York Police Department whistleblower Craig Bartmer?
And the whole time you're hearing thoom, 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 thoom. So, I think I know an explosion when I hear it.
None of these explosions are a part of the official story. How about this gentleman, Kevin McPadden, former Air Force medic?
And then it was like another 2-3 seconds, you heard explosions, like ba-boom. It's like a distinct sound. It's not like when in compression, like boom, 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 like floors that were dropping and collapsing. This was ba-boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something. That, to me, I knew that was an explosion.
Why didn't these... This evidence of explosives, this eyewitness testimony, make it into the 9/11 Commission report? Oh, the 9/11 Commission report, 571 pages of it, did not have one mention of the third worst structural failure in modern history. What kind of explosions are we talking about?
Yeah, here's one of the guys who can tell you I'm okay, all right? Here, hold on. You want to call your mother or something?
That was on the afternoon of 9/11. Do we have enormous pyroclastic clouds of pulverized concrete? Well, watch the expanding gases racing away from Building 7 at 35 miles an hour in every direction, propelled by this incredible heat. Where's all that heat coming from? The 8 to 10 small isolated pockets of fire in the building? We'll take a look where the source of that heat might be in just a moment. Do we have pools of molten iron? Interesting. The story gets thicker. This section applies to the Twin Towers as well. As we see, pouring out of the South Tower 10 minutes prior to its collapse, molten iron. Turns out to be molten iron, I'll show you. It's certainly molten metal. NIST says it's molten aluminum from the airplane. Problem is, molten aluminum looks like molten aluminum. It's silvery. It doesn't glow bright yellow, bright orange in daylight conditions. So it's not molten aluminum. Who says this? As if 21 days after the attack, the fires were still burning and molten steel was still running. None other than Leslie Robertson, the structural engineer of the World Trade Center, himself to a conference of structural engineers in October. Fires burned and molten metal flowed, says this urban search and rescue worker. Red-hot steel being pulled from deep within the pile. What did the first responders and demolition workers say? Peter Tully, president of the guy who's supposed to clean up all this stuff. He saw pools of literally molten steel. He's calling it molten steel. It was dripping from the molten steel, seeing the molten steel. What's the problem here? Steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit. But the fires, according to Iger, were 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. They don't have any evidence for fire temperatures, by the way, over 600 or 700 degrees. NIST claims 1,800 degrees. Either way, it's well under the requirement to begin to melt steel. Where could it be coming from? We're going to be looking at a suspect called thermite. Before we get to that, let's listen to John Gross, lead engineer of NIST, tell us about the molten steel from his perspective.
First of all, let's go back to your basic premise that there was a pool of molten steel. I know of absolutely nobody, no eyewitness who has said so, nobody who's produced it.
You'd get down below and you'd see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like lava.
Like lava
from a volcano.
There's no eyewitness who has said so.
There actually melted beams where it was molten steel that was being dug out.
Underground, it was still so hot that molten metal dripped down the sides of a wall.
And the cleanup was very difficult. The steel was coming out red in certain areas from the first
couple of weeks at least.
Nobody who's produced it.
This fused element of steel, molten steel.
Nobody who's produced it. Nobody who's produced it.
Massive pictures, thermal images showed those sorts of temperatures in the basement.
I know of absolutely nobody, no eyewitness who said so, nobody who's produced it.
What's the problem here? Somebody's lying. Why would an official representative of NIST, agency for the government, be telling us that there's no evidence? Because they can't possibly produce it can't possibly be produced by the fires. The fires just can't produce it. So the official story gets the rug pulled out from it. We're talking about a whole new ballgame then. Well, what are we talking about? But is there chemical evidence of explosives in the steel? Well, let's take a look. Could thermite have produced it? What is thermite anyway?
Thermite. An incendiary used by the military, thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel. We know that open-air fires cannot burn hot enough to melt steel. But metal had melted at the base of the towers. Appendix C of the FEMA report describes sulfur residues on the World Trade Center steel. The New York Times called this the deepest mystery of all. Sulfur slightly lowers the melting point of iron, and iron oxide and iron sulfide had formed on the surface of the structural steel. Sulfur used with thermite is called thermate, producing even faster results.
This is getting pretty interesting so far. Did anybody do analysis on the previously molten metal? Well, Dr. Stephen Jones did, a physicist formerly from Brigham Young University, analyzes a piece from this 40-pound chunk, does his electron microprobe data, determines that it's predominantly iron. It's not aluminum. It's not steel. It has it has abundant manganese, so it's not structural steel. It has very little chromium. It has small amounts of aluminum, sulfur, and potassium, key ingredients of thermite. Unfortunately, it has manganese and fluorine in abundance. Manganese and fluorine? Well, manganese is from potassium permanganate, which is used as an oxidizer in thermite charges. And fluorine is used in very special thermite charges called sol gel types. This is the fingerprint of thermite. NIST refuses to test for thermite. And sol gels would leave another residue, 1,3-diphenylpropane, that's not found in office fires. In fact, EPA analysis finds one molecule that was present at levels that dwarfed all others, 1,3-diphenylpropane. This is in the air during their toxicological studies. Eric Schwartz of the EPA says we've never observed it in any other sampling that we've done. But is there evidence in the dust, this powdered concrete piled 4 to 12 inches thick throughout lower Manhattan? In fact, Dr. Jones has four samples of this dust that's sent to him, one from the Brooklyn Bridge collected 10 minutes later, another from the top of a skyscraper just 2 to 3 blocks away, and one from an apartment, this sample here, Jeanette McKinley's apartment, right across the street from the South Tower. So he starts to do some interesting studies on this. He puts a magnet up to this dust, and he finds all of these metallic particles that come up to the magnet. Well, what are they doing in all the dust samples? Most of them are angular, like metal filings, shiny metal filings. The rest of them are round, billions of them. About 10 tons, as he estimates, must have been throughout all of the lower Manhattan. Well, how did they get round? Well, if you had thousands of thermite cutter charges whose byproduct is molten iron under explosive conditions, atomizing that liquid, it might form into small droplets. What's the shape of these droplets? Tens of thousands, maybe millions of them, just from this piece alone. They're spherical. How do they get spherical? Well, the surface tension of a liquid forms itself into a sphere when it's atomized like this. That's just what it does. It cools and it falls with all of the dust. He does his energy dispersive spectroscopy on this, and what does he find? He finds that it has the same chemical ingredients and proportions as a controlled experiment of ignited thermite. That's disturbing enough. He thinks about this. Well, what would have been in the original recipe, the unignited thermite? Well, he speculates that it would have been powders of aluminum, iron oxide, copper oxide, zinc nitrate, potassium permanganate. So he goes back to the dust once again. And what does he find? They come up to the magnet also. He missed them the first time. This is only a year or so old. These tiny chips, this one a 16th of an inch long, red on one side, gray on the other. It's actually quite fascinating because it has the same or very similar characteristics of its chemical composition to known thermite. This isn't put together by colliding airplanes with steel structure, aluminum and steel. Why? Because the particles of the aluminum and the iron oxide are 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. They're perfectly rhomboidal in shape, the iron oxide. The platelets of aluminum are perfectly uniform. They're mixed 1/3, 2/3 in the ideal proportion. This is nanothermite. It's very sophisticated stuff. It's made only in highly sophisticated defense contracting laboratories. It's not made in a cave in Afghanistan, folks. When you get the surface area small enough, the particles small enough, the surface area becomes huge. So the chemical reaction is almost instantaneous. So we have an explosive incendiary. Thermite's an incendiary. Super thermite or nanothermite becomes very explosive. So now you have a product that doesn't have the loud bang of high-energy explosives like C4 or RDX. Doesn't have the bright flashes of those products normally associated with controlled demolition. So if you were trying to perform a deceptive controlled demolition, this might be the product you'd use, except that it would leave a whole lot of molten metal droplets, which appear here, associated with the chips that are partially ignited as well. This is all documented in a 27-page peer-reviewed paper. It's direct evidence of explosive controlled demolition, documenting 100 nanometer across, 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. We have this paper in the back, and it's very devastating. Niels Harrit from across the sea in Holland has speaking about this. It's creating quite a controversy in circles. This is compelling evidence that thermite reaction compounds were deliberately placed in the World Trade Center towers and Building 7. This is all direct evidence of explosive destruction. Fire can't account for any one of these, let alone all 10 of them. We have data from NIST report. In fact, they document in Appendix C intergranular melting, rapid oxidation, sulfidation on the two pieces of steel that were saved out of hundreds and hundreds, thousands. They were sent to China for recycling before this report came out. What did the report say when it came out? Our best hypothesis of this building's collapse, which is fire and some damage from North Tower, has only a low probability of occurrence. Further investigation research is necessary. But all the steel had been shipped by FEMA. They ordered the steel shipped to China for recycling. But they had documented intergranular melting. Fires don't melt steel. Thermite does. Is this Swiss cheese, or is this former wide flange column from World Trade Center 7? Do we have expert corroboration? Here's Danny Jawinko, 27-year controlled demolitions expert. He says it starts from below. They've simply blown away the columns. This is controlled demolition. A team of experts did this. It's professional work, without any doubt. Well, he's across the sea in Holland. His clients aren't the richest people in the world in America. Why aren't the controlled demolition companies speaking out about this? Because they would lose their clientele, many of which is the federal government. Do we have foreknowledge of the destruction of this building? Listen to these mysterious construction.
Oh, Lord.
You hear that?
Keep your eye on that building. It'll be coming down.
The building is about to blow up. Move it back.
All right, guys.
We are walking back. It's a building about to blow up. Debris coming down.
How do they know the building is about to blow up? This is not supposed to happen. Do we have... we're going backwards. Let's not go backwards. How about this? What else did Kevin McPadden, former Air Force medic, say?
At the last few seconds, he took his hand off, and you heard 3, 2, 1.
Do fires bring buildings down to countdowns? This is very disturbing. The BBC announces the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it happened. It's true. They apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. Does that make them psychic? Jane Stanley's, the 47-story Solomon Brothers, close to the World Trade Center, has also collapsed. This is all direct evidence in the case of Building 7. Now, it's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The problem is that the World Trade Center, we have even far greater evidence, and we're going to give you the essential components of this as quickly as we can in the time remaining, and I encourage you to look at the rest on the DVD. Sounds produced by explosions. Well, the fire chief commissioner had all of his first responders recorded. Out of 500 of them, 118 were recording sounds of explosions, flashes of light. Shook my bones, he says. Shortly before the first tower came down, I remember feeling the ground shaking, heard a terrible noise, and then a debris just started flying everywhere. Somewhere around the middle of the World Trade Center, there was this orange and red flash coming out. This didn't come out from the city of New York until August of 2005. Why? Because they kept it hidden, and they were sued, ultimately, by the New York Times, and the New York Court State of Appeals overturned it. Now we know about this, and it's just not hitting the media. Seemed like on television when they blow up these buildings. Seemed like it was going all the way around like a belt. All these explosions. That's when I saw the building coming down. A number of brief light sources being emitted from the building between floors 10 and 15. I saw low-level flashes. What did these guys experience?
We started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, if it had detonated.
Detonated.
If they were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
All the way down. We started.
Well, let's take a look. We have a known control. We have a known explosion, the volcanic eruption in the Tongan Sea. And we have an acknowledged explosion. Is there any relationship? The upward, outward streaming streamers and symmetry, the geometry of fireworks, is there enough relationship to warrant an investigation into explosions? Let's take a look at the North Tower now. The North Tower comes down, curiously enough, after a couple of explosions at the top, and then we see it telescope in on itself such that over half of its volume is gone in the first 4 seconds. Before there's any movement downward, let's take a look. Watch the corner of this building. Here, there'll be no movement down until, and by the way, you'll see these rapidly developing belts, like the fireman said. Corner's still there. Where's the mass that's supposed to drive this down to the bottom? Look underneath now. This is not going to play for us tonight. Do we have a straight down symmetrical progression outside the footprint? 95% of the debris has been blown outside the footprint in this 207-foot wide building. The gravitational collapse we should be finding at the base of each building, 110 floors, 4-inch thick concrete, poured over metal decking like this. 220 acres of this stuff should be found with file cabinets and desks and partitions and people in between it. But in the pile at the bottom, we don't find one floor in any of the photos. much less 220 floors. What happened to them? This is a gravitational collapse. There should be a pile 40 stories high at the bottom, or 20. It's 2 stories high, and it's composed of rubble. This is what it looks like. Equally displaced structural steel columns, everything else almost, is pulverized. There's no file cabinets, 10,000 file cabinets. 1,500 people, 1,100 people are completely missing, not even a piece small enough to fit into a test tube. That is a real problem for the official story. There are explosions going off 20, 40, 60 stories down below the canopy of destruction. NIST tells us these are puffs of air being produced by that pile driver. But what happens to that pile driver? It's gone. All the photos don't show it at all. After 4 seconds, it's gone. There's nothing tearing the building, pushing the building down. It's tearing itself apart at free fall acceleration almost, in the case of the North and South Tower, about two-thirds of free fall acceleration. And these are very violent, fast ejecting squibs, these explosives. They are occurring at 160 to 200 feet per second. These are explosive speeds, that, propelled by explosive speeds. And we have also a near free fall acceleration. We're talking about 12 seconds.
Galileo's law of falling bodies
collapses down to the ground, depending on how you count it. Now, Mike, could you come up here and help me? Let's just do an experiment, because we have the official story tells us that these blocks, these 15-story sections, fall at 12 seconds is just slightly faster than free fall. So we're going to hold up two 15-story sections with a crane, and we're going to drop them. One over nothing but air, the other one over 80,000 tons of structural steel. Let's just do an experiment here. Mike, can you hold this for me? Let's see what happens. 3, 2, 1. Oh, my God. It doesn't quite work the same. This one dropped at free fall acceleration and no resistance over here. What happened? It met an equal and opposite reaction. It's going to slow down. This is the Volkswagen. This is the Mack truck. This is the lightest part of the building. This is the heaviest part of the building, solid steel almost at the bottom. So through the energy of deformation, it comes to rest. That's acknowledged in technical articles on our website, which I encourage you to take a look at. Now, thanks, Mike. There's no pile driver, though, pushing the rest of the building down. So what's with the experiment anyway? It's a false experiment. So let's not even give in to that part of the official story. What's destroying this building? Well, here we see the South Tower. Whoops. Here we see the South Tower beginning its descent, and it begins to tip. 22 degrees, in fact, off-center. How can it destroy the rest of the building when it's off-center? And there's asymmetrical damage from the fires and the airplanes. What's happening? Just like the firemen saw, like belts all the way around, explosions all the way around the building, two-thirds of free-fall acceleration, the rate at which they go down. How can that happen when the top of it is off-center? We're looking at a very engineered event where the pile is completely broken up. We have complete lateral ejection of these 4 and 20-ton perimeter wall units that land 600 feet away from the tower. The physics of it is such that the lateral component of the lateral force has to be going, they have to be traveling at least 50 miles an hour, in some cases 70. And we don't have any pancakes at the bottom of a pancaking collapse. Where are the floors? And we're looking for pancaking collapses in buildings that fall due to gravitational collapses, or progressive classic collapse, they say. And where's all the concrete? Governor Pataki says that he couldn't find any concrete. It simply made it all the way, these concrete clouds, all the way across the river. So let's jump ahead. An And let me ask you at this point, with just a snippet of this information and the 30 structural engineers that have joined Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth calling for a new investigation, including this gentleman who says the prevailing theory would have us believe that each of the Twin Towers inexplicably collapsed upon itself, crushing all 287 massive columns on each floor while maintaining a near free fall acceleration, as if the 100,000 or more tons of supporting structural steel framework didn't even exist. So let me ask you at this point, how many of us believe that the Twin Towers were brought down by jet plane impacts and fire, structural weakening? At this point, we're just going to compare to our last. You have to vote. This is the deal. Anybody? Go like this. One in the back. Two. How many did we have before, Tanya? 21. 21 before, two now. And this is only 30 minutes, and you haven't seen the two-hour DVD? You got to see the two-hour DVD. How many are still unsure? Surely there's some people that are unsure. Let me count you real high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 15. How many were there before? 15 versus 41. So that's very helpful. Well, who else demands real answers about 9/11? All of these distinguished people at Patriots, visit Patriots Question 9/11, including the former defense minister of West Germany, the former president of Italy, a key senator in Japan, the former defense minister of Canada, all calling for a new investigation. So unfortunately now, this is just the beginning of a disturbing and essential journey for you back into the nightmare of 9/11. The questions raised are numerous and ominous that must be answered in a new investigation. You will have to discover the evidence that I have not had time. So you have to follow up and know that we have resources for you, DVDs and brochures outside after downstairs after you leave. We'll give you a brochure which contains the cards that have all of this evidence listed for you, and an outline that, as you've been seeing, our chart will be very helpful for your understanding as well. And so you can read David Ray Griffin, excellent books, particularly New Pearl Harbor Revisited, and I'm asking you all to sign our petition, and I'm asking you to join New York City Coalition for Accountability Now, who has 80,000 New Yorker signatures calling for a new investigation. I'm also asking you to become a sustaining member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Help us out. And we have a lot of work to do, and we can't do it without you. So we're asking you to speak out now, because a time comes when your silence is betrayal. Thank you so very much for your kind attention tonight.
Hello, hello. Our thanks to Richard Gage for his talk on 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, reexamining the destruction of the three World Trade Center towers. And as you gather, this is only a fragment of his usual talk. We'd like to remind our audience that this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Sutter, member of the club's International Relations Forum, and your chair for today. Mr. Gage will take questions from the two microphones in the aisle, so please keep your questions short and civil. This is no Tea Party event. So let's begin.
I did bring my teacup, though. Go ahead.
The New York Times carried a front-page story over the weekend saying that several thousand pieces of steel from the World Trade Center had been, quote, discovered and would be made available to nonprofit organizations for memorials. Has any of that been offered to your organization? Would you like some?
Not yet, but we will apply for such access. To be sure, there are also several steel sculptures that have been erected, and interesting little pieces of these have been tested and have been found to contain thermite. Over here.
I was there. I worked for the Red Cross.
That's thermite residue.
Okay. Okay, I was there, and I smelled it every day. We were driven into the site by the police on their way, taking us to and from our site where we were meeting with firemen's families. And I'll never forget the smell. I now
the smell of what?
The smell of whatever was there. I don't know what
was it. Sulfuric?
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. It was fire, dirt, sulfur, something. It was an odd smell. But my question is this. An awful lot of those folks that were on the rescue group are now sick. And I'm wondering if the thermite has anything to do with the illnesses that are showing up in the rescue people. Do you
Has anybody done any research on that? I'm not aware of thermite. Just real quick, okay. Howard?
The biggest factor is the asbestos.
Well, the asbestos was obviously extremely harmful. These buildings were loaded with asbestos. In fact, New York City was requiring the owner, Larry Silverstein, who purchased this set of buildings only 6 weeks after, before 9/11, by the way, and knowing that the city was requiring them to be completely rehabilitated, get the asbestos out of the building, and that was going to be a $5 billion project. So that raises some questions. Over here.
Okay, there was a 9/11 movie on YouTube that showed squibs coming out at all the different floors. It was
squibs
or
isolated explosive ejections, for those of you who need
so
to.
I was wondering about that, and also if you heard about it was either Halliburton or Brown Root Kellogg, whatever that is. They did some electrical work in the buildings the weekend beforehand, so they had to turn off all the electricity in the buildings for the security cameras and stuff in order to update whatever. Did you hear about that as well?
Yes, there are some stories of power downs, bomb-sniffing dogs removed. We don't have a lot of evidence for that. A lot of people will ask, by the way, speaking of access and security, how could they have gotten into the building? There's 50,000 occupants in these buildings at full occupancy, which they were not anywhere near full occupancy. But it turns out if you had access to the elevator shafts in the building, you would have access to the core columns and beams, and you could plant these explosives in there by simply going through the gypsum board in the shafts. So it turns out we have an elevator modernization in the buildings 9 months prior to the 9/11. The ACE elevator had the contract. They had 85 employees in there who fled, by the way, as soon as the first jet plane impacted. Well, they were supposed to stay and help the first responders to rescue the people. What happened there? We want a real investigation of ACE elevator as well. Over here.
Yes, Richard, you just recently went to Washington, D.C. to an architectural convention there, and I heard you walk the halls of Congress. Who was the most responsive of our elected representatives that you got to talk to?
Yes, in Washington, D.C., we had a 10-by-10 booth where we had all of this evidence presented before architects. Their jaws dropped because they'd never heard of Building 7. It's obviously a controlled demolition to them as well. They're going, why didn't I hear about this? You're hearing about it now. Let's do something. Sign our petition. We got a whole lot of petitions signed. We then had several appointments, about 20, with congressional offices. One of them, Congressman Hunt, can I say this? There was a congressman who indeed did follow up, wrote NIST, said, what's up with this thermite? Did you look for it? NIST writes back, no, we didn't look for it. It would have been inconclusive because there's aluminum and steel in the building, so don't worry about it. It's all under control. So we're going to be writing about that as well. Thank you. Over here.
Yeah. Do you have an opinion about Oklahoma City? I think it's sort of weird that a fertilizer bomb in front can, like, blow out a building from two different places outward.
There are people traveling the country who have researched the Oklahoma City bombing of the Murrah building and have found many incongruities, many problems with the official story, a lot of evidence suggesting more than one explosive and... I encourage you all to do research there. I haven't really done it, but I've heard enough to disturb me. Over here.
You're talking about the Twin Towers and WTC-7 both being controlled demolition, but they look pretty different, and I'm wondering what the difference is.
Yes, thank you. Building 7 was a classic, appears as exactly as a classic controlled demolition, an implosion, whereas the Twin Towers, everything is explosive. Blowing outside the footprint, very explosive. Why would that be? Well, perhaps because they didn't have access to the perimeter walls, the charges in the building had to be explosive, enough power to blow not only the core structure, but the floors and the perimeter as columns as well. Also remember that this is what amounts to a psychological operation against the American people. Those who've researched this cite that if you want to go to war, you do it like every other war that's been started. If you redo the research there, You find false flag operations that are set up attacking your country, blaming it on another, so you have an excuse to go to war. Vietnam, World War I, World War II, the sinking of the Maine, the Spanish Civil War, the incident with the USS Liberty. Research all of those, even Pearl Harbor. You'll find many, many very interesting facts we do not hear in the mainstream media. You cannot get accurate information that you can trust in the mainstream media. You learned that tonight. Now's your time to start. Get on the internet. Google 9/11 truth. False flag operations. You'll find a whole history that you may have been completely unaware of, as was I 3 years ago. Over here.
Could you comment on Shorenstein saying, take the building down? I think that was his name, the owner of the building. And the videos at the DOD and the Cleveland Airport list.
Well, Larry Silverstein was the owner of the building. Let's listen to him.
He's been considered the starting point for rebuilding. Located north of the slurry wall, 7 had been cleared faster than the rest of the site. And there had been no bodies to recover. Pelted by debris when the North Tower collapsed, 7 burned until late afternoon, allowing occupants to evacuate to safety.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. And I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
What does he mean? Well, he came back later and said, I meant to pull the firemen out of the building. But it's documented that there were no firemen in the building to pull out. They were scratching their heads, wondering why they weren't fighting the building. The other question had to do with the Pentagon. There's enough confusion about the evidence relative to the Pentagon to scare even the worthiest researcher from it, and disinformation as well. So we don't touch it because the evidence is very clear, especially when you look at the rest of the 2 hours that we have available for you tonight outside. And I think we're ready.
No, there's time for just one more question. And so the gentleman over there.
The nanothermite was not developed by Afghanis in a cave. It was developed with NIST in collaboration with the Lawrence National Laboratory, controlled by UC University of California system. The cave is in Oakland at the University of California headquarters.
Well, our thanks to Richard Gage, speaker on 9/11 Blueprint for Truth. Still thing on? Yeah. Re-examining the destruction of the 3 World Trade Center towers for enlightening us today. We also thank our audience here, and especially Karen Kiefer of the International Relations Forum for helping making this event possible. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion is adjourned. Thank you.